In the United States, 40% of the food that we produce is going to waste.
When we look at a world that will have 9 billion people in a relatively few years, and we've got people that are going to bed hungry, the idea of wasting food, there's something wrong.
Food production is the single biggest cause of deforestation, the single biggest cause of water extraction, the single biggest cause of habitat loss and biodiversity loss. One third of all of that impact is going on to produce food that ends up being wasted.
Numbers are numbers. 800 million people are starving. 1.3 billion tons of food is waste every year. So we don't need to produce more. We need to act different.
Let's eat!
More sugar!
Ah, the glories of food. The communication of communion. Ethelman Rosenberg are passing among you now with the plates. I want you to
think of those plates and
eat of those condiments there. I want you to fill your
body sure
and your
heart
and your mind with the thoughts of your friend Jesus said, let us be as children.
Some cookies, lots of green maraschino cherries, half a jar of mayonnaise. Oh, that's my mascot. Laughing cow cheese. Oh, Jesus. Oh, it's my mouth dry. I'm so hungry. There's nothing to eat here.
Food prices are taking an even bigger bite out of your paycheck these days.
More than 15,000 scientists are sounding an alarm about climate change. They call it a warning to humanity.
Across East and Southern Africa, malnutrition rates are soaring.
Our world now faces what could be a monumental crisis. How are we going to feed ourselves without destroying the ecosystems we depend on? We already produce enough food to feed everyone on the planet. Yet 800 million people are undernourished, and at the same time, another 2 billion people are overweight or obese. And in all of this, almost one-third of the food we produce goes to waste.
It is absolutely mind-boggling. So what we have right now is food waste amidst food insecurity. It's a paradox.
So how did we get to this lopsided reality? And what can be done to change it?
The fundamental thing from my perspective is that we as consumers and citizens do not value food enough.
It may help to take a step back, to look at the food system as a whole, to identify where waste is actually occurring.
We waste food at every link in the supply chain. If you start on farms, entire fields of crops are sometimes being wasted just because a supermarket has said that it doesn't look perfect. Bring it down to restaurants, where very often plates are piled so high with food that even humans with the biggest appetite you can imagine cannot eat it all.
And finally, monsieur, a wafer-thin mint.
Bah.
Oh, sir, it's only a tiny little thin one.
Nah, fuck off, I'm full.
Oh, sir. Hmm? It's only a wafer-thin.
Look, I couldn't eat another thing. I'm absolutely stuffed. Bugger horse.
Just one.
Just one.
Just the one, sir. Voila. Bon appétit.
Okay, so there is excess food from farms, from restaurants, from supermarkets. Now what? The Environmental Protection Agency has developed a food waste pyramid to help us upcycle waste and keep it out of landfills.
obviously the first priority with any food is to ensure that it does actually reach humans for consumption. The next best option, we say, is to at least feed it to livestock so that they can turn it back into food.
If food scraps cannot be upcycled to feed people, cannot be used to feed livestock, it can be used to generate energy through a process called anaerobic digestion. If food scraps can't be used for energy, they can be used to create nutrient-rich soil, and that's composting.
The thing that we should never be doing is sending food waste into landfill. In landfills, food waste decomposes in the absence of oxygen. It produces methane, which is 23 times more powerful as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. And yet, in the United States, over 90% of all food scraps are going into landfill. That is crazy.
Stuff that we don't necessarily want to be eating can be fed to livestock. Pigs can eat any kind of food scrap that you have, right? They don't need to just be eating corn and soy.
The United Nations estimated that if we fed waste to pigs instead of using the corn-soy mix, we could liberate enough food globally to feed 3 billion people.
Throughout history, humans have used pigs and chickens for the explicit purpose of recycling leftover food back into edible food.
Japan has a serious problem. It's a tiny island with loads of people on it. The Japanese government realized that they had a massive problem of importing too much corn and of running out of landfill space. They introduced the food waste recycling laws that said, look, we're going to prevent food waste wherever possible, but any food that can't be fed to people, we're going to recycle it into livestock feed.
Pig farmers all over Japan are creating brand name labels of pork by being selective and inventive about what food waste their pigs eat.
So coming to Japan, I knew there were over 400 different varieties of pork. Learning that certain pigs were fed rice leftover from the sake making process, or certain pigs were being fed like matcha, certain pigs were being fed pineapple scraps, tuna scraps.
The Japanese, they're beginning to feed specific things to animals and then tracking, what does that do to the flavor profile of that pig? What's that gonna taste like?
Because of us, it's morning in America.
Breakfast, honey?
Thanks. Hey, is this real pork?
Because of us, people in the Great Plains are just plain doing things. Little things like taking money from machines.
Hey, stop, kid, I'm not a machine.
Because of us, they're roasting East Coast marshmallows on the West Coast.
Wow, these taste like pork.
We're the people of U.S. Plus. Guess what we do?
Chemistry?
Transportation? Pork?
Kind of. U.S. Plus. We own the idea of America.
These are my comments from my trip to Japan in the summer of 2007. I had previously been in Japan 4 years before, and the food in 2003 was still as good as I remembered when I lived there up until 1988. However, when I returned in 2007, the quality of the food had deteriorated precipitously, all of it except the pork.
Look, that's a pork byproduct sandwich.
That's a what?
Pork it's byproducts. It's a new thing here in New York now.
Pork byproduct.
Pork byproduct, because a lot of the food has gotten so expensive. You have all the proteins and all the nutrients of a choicer cut
right.
of pork.
This is a choicer cut. Right.
But this is your pork byproduct sandwich.
You can see the...
When I ate at Katsugan 4 years ago, it was after I'd been told my old favorite tonkatsu restaurant, Tonki, was no more, and this was the new capital of pork worship. I was so impressed with my first visit, I came back again during brief time in Tokyo then. This was my first visit on this trip, just as good as I recall. Menu is so funny, assuming you know English, that whatever calamities have befallen you before coming to the Marunouchi building to devour its sublime pork will vanish away in hilarity and amazing meat. You read, between guffaws, of the arduous selection process of their pork and their homemade breadcrumbs. I can imagine the owners of the restaurant sowing the wheat, raising it, milling it into flour, baking bread, and then making the breadcrumbs to encrust this finely appreciated piece of pig meat. I was instructed to try its two kinds of salt, but micro-experiment proved enough. Save the salt for bad food. This is not that. The miso soup wasn't as good as I recall from 4 years ago, and maybe they should hire someone to convert their menu into a known language, but for good tonkats, you'll want to check this out. Identifying your supplier, or even being your supplier, these were marketing tools that could have a good effect. If you know brand X is good, maybe you'll notice when it isn't. I noticed when a local cider maker changed its taste but kept its name. Did no one notice when Denny's went from great food to anti-food? Next, Eichi and Tomomi, the people I was staying with, met me at Tonki, still in Meguro, but in a different location. After a long wait, the pork was very good, but not as good as the tonkats I just had 2 days before at Katsugen. No photos were taken. If you like tonkats, you won't be disappointed here, but my memories of its standout egg batter-based breadcrumb empire are as long gone as the Austro-Hungarian Empire of my grandparents' day. Hamamat's bar acquaintances told me to order the ebi fry, big fried shrimp, in Nagoya, and my Nagoya-esque friend Manny did, but I went for the miso cuts on his wife Minako's advice. A pleasant diversion from the usual tonkats and apple-based sauce. My Vancouver friend was also about Kanto, so we checked out his discovery in the Koredo building in Nihonbashi, which looks like one of those buildings turned into pirate ships in the Python flick. This was a lunch set. I swapped the fried oysters for some more shiso pork, again with the salt competition, but the sauces were worth exploring, and the food was as good as one would expect if one had very high expectations. One purpose I had in coming to the city, where I'd eat my weight in tonkats on a regular basis, okay, I'm not very heavy, but still, was to find its best tonkats. This was different. For the first time, nearing the end of my 2-week trip here, I had good shrimp. Like my old friend Manny had in the restaurant in Nagoya, it was what I remembered as ubiquitous in Japan. Great shrimp. No oysters, thankfully. And the hirekats, usually the most expensive thing on the plate, was okay. No award winner. Glad they know their pigs, and even gladder that's a trend in Japan now. Hirata Bokujo is on the 4th floor. Eichi had been recommending this place, Maisen, in trendy Omotesando, and I finally went there my last full day in Tokyo. It was as if I'd never eaten tonkats before. Like that first teppanyaki encounter, Admiral Perry invades my tongue. I didn't know tonkats could taste that good, and it is my favorite food.
You produce a delicious but pretty premium product. I think that's fair to say. To what extent do you think a move towards your kind of system would lead ultimately to the more expensive food? And is there a food security trade-off here? Or can you help unravel that one for us at all?
Well, I think that a lot of people, that would be their complaint about organic or agroecological products or things like that. And one of the things you need to understand is part of the premium that we get for our product is because we can get it, right? There's demand. There's unstated demand in the marketplace. That's simple economics. But I think what our smart customers have come to realize is that our product is nutrient dense. A smaller amount of product satisfies them. It sates their appetites, and it provides them energy, and they feel light, and they go out and they can carry on with their day rather than feeling leaden and sleeping. So I think that in itself provides some value that's unseen. So I'm not so sure we can compare output from different production systems using the traditional metrics. A hardball tomato from Florida in the dead of winter is not a tomato from your backyard. I don't know how they're both called tomatoes, right? And should we be buying beef by protein or by pounds? What are we really trying to obtain? Are we trying to obtain nourishment, or are we just trying to buy pure pounds? So we have to factor that all in, and I don't think the market's effectively done that yet.
The sauce in the biggest jar was the best. Was that grated daikon in it? No, that wouldn't keep very long. Something chunkified the sauce, like sudden bombs of pleasure blowing your enjoyment of the tonkatsu into some other level. This must be what only the emperor got to eat not so long ago. I'd had a lot of good food and spent a lot of energy in search of it. But eating the top grade of hirakatsu at this restaurant, show up before noon to avoid the rush, is why you're alive. There may be pleasures greater than this food, but the difficulties you'd have finding them make a Maisen meal about as good as is available in this known universe.
These fuzzy-wuzzies that I was recently with have an interesting ritual concerning pigs, you see. Mm-hmm. Actually, what they do if they have a fight between the two villagers, you see, the defeated side elects to abandon their village, the warfare ceases, the hostilities linger on until a formal peace ceremony reconciles the principal parties. Mm. Arranging the ceremony, which features the ritual slaughter and consumption of a pig.
Wonderful.
Then there are dances in the villages and pig exchanges on a large scale.
Sorry.
Pig rituals. A local group signals that it is entering into a truce by sacrificing all but its juvenile pigs to its ancestors in partial payment for their assistance in the hostilities just concluded. It may not again initiate hostilities until it has completed payment to the same supernaturals through another series of large-scale sacrifices. The number of animals required for such sacrifices are not specified. There is prestige to be gained in the eyes of members of other local populations by sacrificing large numbers of pigs, and this prestige can, to some extent, be converted into military support. But large pig herds are burdensome, because they must be fed, and nuisances, because the beasts invade gardens. When women's complaints concerning the labor they must expend in feeding pigs and the nuisance of garden invasions by pigs exceed a reference value, the limits of tolerance of a sufficient number of people to shape a consensus, a corrective program in the form of a pig festival is staged, during which the pig herd is drastically reduced. Garden invasions and women's complaints about pigs are reduced to zero, or nearly so. And at the same time, obligations to ancestors are fulfilled, permitting the celebrants to initiate hostilities once again.
There is a patrolman
Free
in
the
Boston
Anthropology 7
who has formed an organization called something like the Patrolman's Friendship Association, mm-hmm. and the standard bearer and the emblem is a pig called Fuzzy. And he says that Fuzzy the pig, representing all the policemen and the people who like policemen, is better than all the hippies.
Well, we work in this group manipulation program and start with pigs, groups of pigs.
With any success, Doctor?
No. But it's just an experimental program, so we expect some fallbacks before we can really get rolling with it. And the government grants are going to last us for years, so we don't care.
Is there any possible social use of the garbage?
No.
That's
no
social value
the
there
pigs,
either.
The pigs eat it, but then they make more garbage.
That's right.
And although they're very clean little animals.
Very clean.
But the patients confronted with a gaggle of pigs find it a difficult and interesting.
Everywhere there's lots of piggies living piggy lives. You can see them out for dinner with their piggy wives. Clutching forks and knives to eat.